Businesses waste thousands upon thousands of dollars a year on improper advertising tactics. It's imperative for you to understand what actually works when it comes to advertising. Now, you won't figure it out, and you won't figure out what truly works without some form of testing, and let's be honest, most likely wasting of money. But it's critical to test, and test some more. A, B, C, D, and even Z your way to advertising success by creating these tests. On today's webinar in particular, we have a great session for you that you're going to learn all these different things about advertising techniques, sales funnels, lead generation, etc. We have Garrett Gillen from 215 Marketing. We have Dennis Brown and Stuart Trier. There's also an entire transcription of the webinar, the Penji Masterclass, directly below in this particular within the show notes is a link directly to Penji, so you could see the entire transcription if you feel like reading it, and if maybe you just can't hear exactly, you can follow along right there. But let's get to it. Enjoy today's Penji Masterclass.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us on this live webinar. Today's topic is how to make online marketing and advertising work. My name is Jonathan Grzbowski, and I'm part of the growth team here at Penji, and I'll be the moderator of this panel. I'll be the judge, the referee, so to speak. And today I'm joined by three incredible men in the advertising, lead generation, and marketing world. I'd like to give 2 minutes to each member to just explain a little bit more about who you are and what you do. And Stuart, I'd like to just start with you. Go right ahead, my friend.
So predominantly I work with digital marketers in terms of scaling up their business. So how to go from the inflection points that happen. So a lot of marketers stall out at, let's say, $5,000 to $10,000 a month because they are decent at what they're doing in terms of execution, but they don't have systems, processes for their lead generation or their sales or their delivery. So it's a matter of they run out of hours and they get into this churn. So really I help them transition from that. And then from there, as they scale, I work with them. Biggest clients doing probably $800,000 to $900,000 a month in terms of digital marketing. And I start with people that are right at the beginning of their journey.
Very cool. Dennis, how about yourself? All right. How about you, Garrett?
Yeah, I think Dennis is frozen over there.
I thought he was building suspense.
Yeah. He's about to drop a bomb.
You want me to go, or is Dennis?
Go for it, Garrett. Go for it.
All right, I'm good. So, yeah, my name is Garrett Gillen. I'm a principal at 215 Marketing. We're a Philly-based lifecycle marketing company. Two of our primary tactics here are online advertising and email marketing. We help businesses in a number of ways. I think similar to Stuart, we actually work a lot with, I hate to use the word digital transformation, but implementing technology to help make marketing and sales more efficient. With that, getting them on programs for online advertising and ongoing email marketing and sales enablement. Our biggest clients, AWeber, email marketing platform, Drexel University, Temple University. We also work a lot with mid-market B2Bs, a lot of franchises. So I have a pretty, I would say, broad experience across a lot of different business models when it comes to online advertising and marketing.
Very cool. Thank you, Garrett. And Dennis, are we good to go?
Yeah, I think so. We're going to give it a shot.
Nice. Great background, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm probably best known these days for the guy who was able to leverage LinkedIn starting back in 2008. And I was able to generate over $20 million in new business using LinkedIn, all organic. So no paid ads. So, that came after, the last 25 years of being an entrepreneur. And then I stumbled across LinkedIn. And fortunately, we leveraged that to grow that business to about 80 million in sales. And then I exited, sold that company. Since then, I help small business owners, entrepreneurs, B2B sales organizations to leverage LinkedIn to grow their businesses. And so, my business is called Linked Academy. And, that's what I focus on these days.
One of the hardest things to do in any business is lead generation. So I'd love for each of you, as we start this conversation, to give some tips on maybe some quick tips on maybe some of some things that we are just not doing correctly when it comes to our lead generation, either our advertising or digital marketing. And Stuart, unfortunately, you will be the chosen one for this conversation to start us off. Just give us some quick, just maybe that one thing that we should be doing, but just aren't.
So again, based on who I work with, a lot of times what I see is they haven't nailed who it is they're trying to focus on in terms of their avatar. And so until you really understand who it is you're trying to figure out to target, your message isn't really going to resonate with your audience. So a lot of people try to go broad, and you know, when you're first starting out and trying to get momentum in your business, until you actually have a very clear understanding of who it is you're targeting, what they're seeing, what they're thinking, what their aspirations are, what their challenges are, it's hard to break through the noise in the marketplace and ultimately grab their attention, which is the primary function when you're doing lead generation, is first to grab attention, then to get them to view you as a provider of choice so that you can sell them something at a premium versus a commodity price.
Garrett, how about yourself? When it comes to something that we just aren't understanding when it comes to our digital marketing, what would you say that is from like an advertising perspective?
Yeah, well, actually, I was going to say, is this conversation, I think you have to ask yourself, you know, what business are we talking about before we answer that question? And when we say lead-based, I'm assuming it's primarily like a B2B type of business or, you know, something more service-oriented. So I think we're gearing it towards that. But and also, is this primarily about online? Do you want me to focus on online?
Or? Yeah, it would be great to do some type of just in your realm, online advertising, something that you're just seeing that people are just not hitting the mark and they should be doing. And maybe there's a lot of money wasted on the table because of it.
Yeah, so we work with a lot of franchises, and I think the problem is everybody thinks that, you know, paid advertising can solve all their problems, and we are a big paid advertising agency. But at the end of the day, you really want to exhaust, I would say, strategic partnership channels and direct outreach before you start spending a lot of money on paid search or display advertising, things that are hard to measure, right, or that might be a little bit more difficult. So usually when we work with a franchise client, the first thing we do is just say, who are your strategic partners, or can we do direct response campaigns, whether that be direct outreach or networking events, trade curated events, things like that. And email marketing, obviously, for anybody on the call, I'm sure they're all, you know, pitching this to their clients as well. That's really where we start, right? Aggregating a list of strategic partners or people that you can reach out to directly, and then getting them on that program first because it's cost effective, and then moving on to paid channels online.
Dennis, I get about like 15 messages a day on LinkedIn from some spammers asking me to check out their portfolio or whatever crap that it is. How about yourself? We have two people here talking about their audience and understanding the right person. Can you expand a little bit on that, and how can you leverage, what are some common mistakes that we're using when it comes to the world of LinkedIn?
So let me start with common mistakes that I see, and it's not as much geared towards LinkedIn, but in marketing in general, especially when you talk about the online space. The focus is always on more leads. More leads equals better. That's the focus, right? More, more, more. How can I get more? When in reality, it's not quantity. It needs to be more quality driven. And I think that's where a lot of people are dropping the ball. I had a conversation with Jamie Masters on my Growth Expert podcast not long ago, and we dove into that. And her focus was really, you know, on the conversion process and really optimizing that conversion process, because I think that's where a lot of people are spending time and energy and resources and worse yet, money to generate all these leads. And it does tie into that avatar. They're getting more leads, but the quality is just not there. And thus the conversion is lousy, and they're not able to, you know, they're not able to sustain the campaign because there's no ROI.
And I would say that's probably because they may not understand the audience that they're trying to go after. Would you say that's relatively true?
I definitely think that's part of it. But I also think that there's this focus on more leads, but not so much on the optimization piece on the back end, right? So, I mean, you know, especially when you have a lot of startups and younger entrepreneurs, I mean, the more sophisticated and mature an organization is, obviously they're going to have a much better handle. They should have, or you'd think they'd have a better handle on their on their conversion process. But I think that whole philosophy of more leads is better is wrong, because, and this was one of the things that caused me to shift my mindset back even in 2008. We were not doing paid ads, but we were generating a fair amount of inbound leads through content marketing back then. And the problem was the quality was lousy. We were spending a lot of time having my salespeople filter through all those leads, and it was very time intensive. And that's when I pivoted to LinkedIn, and LinkedIn allowed me to really get hyper focused on who we were targeting and who we were doing our outreach. Now, LinkedIn was very different back then, right? I think we can all admit a decade ago, LinkedIn was very different. And not a lot of people were using it as a prospecting tool, but we were able to find exactly who we wanted to talk to,
yeah,
and get hyper focused on the message. And then at that point, that's why we were able to get great conversions.
Stuart, you smiled a little bit while Dennis was talking. I'd like to hear what was going on in your head while Dennis was speaking.
Well, again, just to jump on that point, I think that a lot of people, especially newer in their journey, think that more is better. And it's kind of like, if you equate it to business is about relationships, and people are very adept. They learn this in kindergarten that, you know, it's not a matter of how many friends you say hi to, it's a matter of how many people care about you. And you're really trying to create relationships online. And this whole automation thought process of how many people can I interact with at a very shallow level, you're not moving them through a process that's developing relationship. And so it's one of the things I see a lot. People are like, well, how am I going to send 1,000 messages a day? It's like, you don't need to send 1,000 messages. For most people, they need a few clients coming into their pipeline and closing. They don't need 500 people who are not right for their business coming in. And so that's what I was thinking. It's definitely something that's systemic, especially amongst newer entrepreneurs who haven't figured out how to get their traction yet in the market.
Mm. And how can we do that? And I'll start with Garrett, if that's okay. From an online perspective, it's incredibly difficult to have somebody look at an advertisement or look at the brand or look at whatever it may be and then be able to instantly say, this is the right fit for me. Is there anything that you've seen that has worked really well? And I'd like to ask every single person this question, so I'll go down the line. Is there something that you've seen, whether it's through your clients or whether it's through a case study or whatever it may be, where you know, this is a great start to advertisements, or this is a great start to marketing, and then finding a way to lead them through the entire sales funnel to inevitably a sale?
I think that really depends on the business case.
Well, right? Let's just say the B2B business. Like, I guess for the sake of all the examples, it'll just be B2B.
Yes. Well, so I guess two things there, and I kind of want to piggyback on Dennis's and Stuart's point to a certain extent. Everyone's always concentrating on lead volume, right? And specifically, and we'll use the word conversion for a lead. So when a conversion happens online, that generates a lead in the pipeline, but those leads have to convert, right? So when we're working with a client and we're trying to figure out, okay, well, what sort of budget do you need or what tactics should you utilize? The conversation needs to start in terms of their expectation around volume of closed deals and the cost per closed deal, right? Your acquisition cost. And I don't think that most people kind of think that far down. They're like, oh, well, I'm willing to spend $1,000 and it's some arbitrary number, right? But they don't realize that just based on all the funnel stages dropping off, that you're going to have an acquisition cost. Right. And there's only so much demand that you can get for your threshold, at a certain level. So we really try to reverse budget. So we'll say based on your customer lifetime value, maybe you're willing to give up, 30% margin. So let's say that's like $1,000 acquisition cost. You need to kind of go through those funnel steps and really come away with what the cost per lead needs to be to meet that expectation. You guys kind of encounter that as well, Dennis, Stuart? Kind of yep. Working backwards from that acquisition cost and lead volume expectation.
Yeah. Customer acquisition cost. If you don't know that, that's where you got to start. And a lot of people don't even know that. That's why they guess.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't even know that's the game. That's the bigger problem, is that they don't understand that marketing is not a cost center. Marketing is really about discovering what that customer acquisition cost is, and is it below the threshold of the investment? In this case, you mentioned 30%. If it is, then you should be scaling up your marketing until it falls above that cost, and in which point, all right, now we need to pivot or look for another avenue to generate those leads below that cost. But that all starts from explaining that to business owners so that they look at marketing in the right viewpoint as an investment that's there to help them scale.
Exactly. And they can't just throw out some arbitrary budget of $1,000 a month. And I'll give an example of this. We worked with a gentleman a while back that was in managed IT services. Anybody here knows those are high ticket, close, right? I mean, you're talking about probably a six-figure contract or $20,000, $30,000 a year for those service contracts. And the budget that we were given was just something arbitrary, right? We want to try this out for $1,000 a month. But when you're trying to do paid search or some other sort of advertising initiative, highly competitive, they know these are high ticket leads. So the cost per click on search was $60, $50 a click, right? So you're talking about getting 10 visitors to your website a month, and then you have to convert them as a lead and then convert that lead to a closed deal, right? So it's just more about communicating that to the client. I think the people that are listening to this podcast right now, this live stream, you know, just understanding that you need to think through how many leads do I need to actually close somebody, right? So if my close rate's 10%, I need at least 10 leads to get a deal. And then what am I willing to actually pay, you know, for a lead or for a deal? And you need to kind of approach it that way. You need to reverse budget, or else no expectations are going to be met, because you're not going to be happy with the lead volume or the cost per lead. And it's just not going to work out. It's not going to lead to new business.
Now I want to clarify, and I'm going to go to Stuart, and then I'm going to go back to Dennis to kind of, to close this particular question out. But you said that how much you're willing to pay, is that for a sale or is that for a lead?
Well, and so everything comes back to, nobody is putting money in for a lead, right? Like nobody wakes up in the morning and says, hey, I have a budget for leads. They have a budget for sales. They just don't look at the whole journey and think the actual objective is, you could be buying leads at $1, but if those leads never convert to customers, you're better off paying $5 for a quality lead that's going to flow through and actually close to a customer, because at the end of the day, that's what your business is designed to do. And so much thinking through this process, as you're reverse engineering it, the higher the value proposition for that lead magnet, where we're investing more money in developing something that's not garbage, it's actually moving them through the journey where they're looking at interacting with this particular business as a positive experience. And wow, if this is what they give for free, what are they going to give at the next stage? What are they going to give at the next stage? And the businesses that do this really well move people through. I mean, that's really where a lot of people make a mistake. They're playing a short game of like, what is the lead cost versus what is the flow right through that journey cost?
Interesting. I do have a question about that, but I'm going to say that because I want to get to Dennis, because Dennis is not necessarily in the advertising space, but could be in the aspect of people. Because when you're using LinkedIn for prospecting, or when you're using another form, a variation of interpersonal relationships, it's a different, I think at least, it could be a different world. So what is, based off of everything that was already said from Stuart and Garrett, what would be your approach?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I guess I just try to keep things really simple, right? I was doing business and an entrepreneur before the internet. So what these guys are just talking about, when we talk about the lifetime value of a client and customer acquisition costs and these things, before I ever did any advertising, I had those metrics defined within my organization. Even though I wasn't advertising, I had cost of sales, right? I had salespeople and I had, you know, all the cost, lead costs, because back then we used to buy leads, you know, you'd buy lists and you'd do this stuff and you'd cold call. And, you know, you have to understand your overall cost, and it hasn't changed. You still have to understand lifetime value of a client and customer acquisition cost. And that's really the game, right? Just like these guys said, that's really the game. Now you know what you can invest, what you should be willing to invest. And if you're not willing to invest, you're probably, those numbers, you're not really concrete on those numbers, or something's wrong, right? From a LinkedIn perspective, One of the things that I really liked about LinkedIn and that I think is so attractive to small business owners is that, and I think it was Stuart that said it, you know, most businesses don't need hundreds of leads or, you know, dozens of new clients. They need a consistent flow of a few new clients per month, right? And if they have that, then it allows them to, you know, to continue that growth pattern, assuming that they have a good lifetime value and some retention, right? So that's one of the primary reasons why I like LinkedIn, because, you know, that what I said early on, which was the targeting component and focusing on quality, LinkedIn allows you, and my strategy and what I've really built my system upon is having conversations with your exact target market, because you're not going to have a dialogue with them unless they are, right? You know who they are going into the game. So it's kind of like retargeting in some cases with paid ads, but even better because you can see their profile, you know exactly what they do, you know what their product is, you know their experience, you know the content they post and engage with. I mean, you've got all kinds of sales intelligence that you've gathered in advance before you ever engage with them. So now if you're missing the mark, right, if you do get in a conversation with that person, whether it be online or offline, if you do get in a conversation, it's your own fault, right? You made a mistake in that targeting, but you should have been able to filter out a lot of that dead wood, right? A lot of the people that aren't good qualified leads. Now they may not be ready to buy, right? They may not be in a position to buy, but that's okay. So you mentioned something earlier, and I don't want to lose track of this. The two things that I think are that I do, and for whatever reason, there's two ways that I nurture those relationships. I'm a very, very soft sell, right? Everything I do in marketing is very, very soft sell. It's never in your face. It's never over the top. It's never, my goal in every conversation that I have is for you to ask me to sell you, not me pitch you on my product. Okay. Mm. Now, again, this is coming from a B2B perspective. So that's my number one goal. And the way I do that is typically through nurturing them through some sort of a messaging sequence on LinkedIn, which is never sales oriented, right? Kind of goes back to, you know, to everybody's most popular book when you talk about social, you know, jab, 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 right hook through from Gary Vaynerchuk, right? I've been using that strategy for a decade, even before Gary made it popular, and I'm glad he did. But that nurturing process and then developing that relationship up front and having more of a relationship-centric program versus a transactional focus. And then the other side of it, which has become really, really relevant and very powerful, particularly since Microsoft's acquisition of LinkedIn, is the organic social component to LinkedIn. Prior to that, LinkedIn was not very social, right? Content marketing was difficult at best, even though stats showed that, you know, they were driving traffic to blogs and, you know, to me, there wasn't a real social component. It was more one way. But since then, it's become very social, where there's a lot of engagement. Content has really become the focal point for them. And people that are able to put out compelling and interesting content for their target market can build an amazing following, can nurture their audience very, very quickly, right? And when I say quickly, over several weeks to several months, and then that nurturing can lead to very interesting conversations. Perfect example. In 2018, and then I'll shut up after this. In 2018, I did a test, okay? I became the crash test dummy, okay? So what I did is I posted on average once per day. I did a social media post on LinkedIn, just a LinkedIn update, an average of once per day, 5 days a week. I didn't really do anything on weekends. And I focused on content that was interesting to my target market, right? And it wasn't about me the majority of the time. It wasn't about my products or services. It wasn't about that at all. What it was about was something that was interesting to them. From that content, I generated 3,500 inbound leads to me, inquiries to me through private message or through social posts or through emails, that inbound leads, 100% organic, 100% free, other than my time for creating the content. Of course, there's always a cost for that. So I just wanted to kind of share that because you were mentioned earlier about the nurturing process. And so that's kind of what I think for small businesses, a lot of small businesses, it becomes a great, and it doesn't mean they shouldn't do paid ads. It just means that there are ways to complement what you're doing without only doing paid ads.
We have three different types of individuals here. Again, we have Stuart, we have Dennis, and Garrett, three professionals in the lead generation marketing space. I'd like to talk more about sales funnels or lead funnels or whatever it is that you want to call it. I think it's an incredibly strong proponent and way to obtain a lead, because if you don't know what the next step is, you'll be lost and you're spending a lot of money where it's not needed. So understanding, I guess, in this context, again, it'll be B2B. I'd love to hear a little bit more about, from each of you, your own unique sales funnels, or at least your ideology behind a good sales funnel. We talked about nurturing the leads. I'm sure that involves some variation of education. I'm sure there's also a soft sell, and then there's a hard sell, because to your point, Dennis, you have to create a right hook in some capacity of it. So I'd love to hear from Garrett, if that's okay with you, to start us off in terms of, like, what is a good setup for a lead, a sales funnel, and just take us through the process from beginning to close.
Yeah, actually, can I give like an example of one?
Or you could do whatever the heck you want, my man.
I'll try to be quick about it, but I think it's more about kind of looking at a business's current sales funnel, if there's an existing one, and trying to see, you know, is it inefficient? Does it cause friction with the buyer experience or that whole client experience while they're going through that sales funnel? And we had a consultancy that we were working with, and the issue was, there was a request for a consultation, and then that would obviously trigger some sort of form or notification to the sales rep, and the sales rep, and this was a national organization, so the sales reps were all over, they would then be notified, they would then have to go back and forth and schedule this consultation with the person, right? And that takes days and emails and all this kind of stuff. During that consultation, they convince them to take an assessment, and then they take an assessment and they have another follow-up one to review this assessment. After that, there's basically a qualification. They review the assessment, see if they're qualified, and then they go into sort of the actual sales, the demos and all that kind of stuff. This would take probably 3 weeks to get to a demo, right? And when you're looking at that, you're saying, all right, well, you can qualify them, but how many people are dropping off and how inefficient is this sales pipeline because of how many steps you're having to go through with this? So I think it's being open to testing different things. What we ended up doing was moving that assessment online, right? So don't try to hide this. Let's move this assessment front and center and let's make that the call to action. And then the consultation is to review that assessment, right? So again, trying to reduce the back and forth, the meeting schedules, all that kind of stuff, and getting a more seamless buyer experience, you know, throughout that. And we did that, and we basically quadrupled our conversion rate, right? So our lead rate. Now, what that was able to do, it gave the salespeople more time, which is extremely important. They can do more with that time instead of sitting there fielding meeting requests and all that kind of stuff. And we increased the volume. Now, were they as qualified because they weren't as invested? Probably not, right? But we're able to get PII, so personal identifiable information. So we're able to do a lot of other tactics with that, even if they're not in market or able to buy right now. And essentially, again, just increase that customer experience so it was a more seamless buying decision.
Stuart, how about yourself? Tell us a little bit more about some hacks in the sales funnel that you'd recommend.
Well, so first and foremost, like I said, I mean, you have to look at the traffic, right? So there's three types of traffic. There's paid, there's free, and there's joint venture traffic. Those are the three types of traffic that are going to flow into this quote-unquote funnel. First and foremost, you really want to understand who is the hungry crowd. Again, it comes down to nailing the avatar. Once you nail the avatar, you need to think about traffic hitting your content or your site as cold, warm, or hot, with the idea being that we need to move them through those stages, right? And so What I want to have people understand is you need to have conversion assets that convert cold traffic to warm traffic to hot traffic to an offer, right? And depending on the nature of what we're selling, that offer could be a tripwire or a trial offer, or it could be a discovery call, a fit, no fit call. And so if we're looking at that continuum, we know things, people are going to always be coming in at one of these three stages. And so do we have content that is going to move people through these stages to the point where they're going to buy or get on a phone with us? And everybody moves at the speed that they want, right? It's kind of like your relationship with your spouse. It moves at the pace of the slower of the two people, in the sense that, like, I met my wife, thought she was amazing and would have married her the next day. It took her a long time to realize that I'm good too. And so the relationship kind of progressed at her pace. And so as marketers, we are ready to sell our top line service tomorrow, right? Today. But the client needs to go through that phase of getting familiar, looking at you as a provider of choice, ultimately coming to the realization that you have what they need. And so we need to design that process online. And very often what happens is that breakage or slippage happens. So, you know, marketers spend a lot of time developing a lead magnet only to send them to a generic thank you page and send them away, right? And you're kind of like scratching your head. Okay, you captured my attention with some content or some ad. You got me to download your lead magnet and now you're sending me away. The way I explain this is if you walk into a suit store and you say, I want to be fitted for a suit, they don't say, here's your suit, goodbye. They say, want a shirt, want a tie, want shoes, want underwear, want socks, want a belt, want another suit. It keeps going until I say no. That doesn't seem to happen for a lot of businesses online. They don't allow people to progress right to being a major buyer seamlessly online. And so you really need to start to think about that lead generation process. What are you doing in your business to convert cold to warm to hot, and then hot to buy? And that's different in every business, but that thought process needs to be there so that you can transition cold to warm to hot.
I like that cold to warm, that whole scenario. What are some things that you could do to do cold? Like, what are some examples that you've seen? And maybe everybody can join in here. What is it for cold? Stuart, I'll start with you. Yeah. Some techniques in order to get from cold to warm, and then so on and so forth. Maybe just a couple examples to get our brains running and to maybe apply it to our business today.
Okay, so initially it all comes back to frame. So let's say you've put out some thought leadership in terms of creating some content for this buyer persona. They land on that content. A content upgrade is a lead magnet, right? So let's say you're talking about something that's of interest to them. You're going to give them value in that initial piece of content. Then you're going to invite them to go a little bit deeper. And that's really what the lead magnet is designed to do. And if you're doing it right, in my opinion, it's short, it's actionable, it's goal orientated, and it's easy for them to see some value because you want them to consume that lead magnet. When they finish that, rather than sending them to a generic page and say, okay, thanks for downloading my lead magnet, bye, I teach, all right, you should have the next stage. And that next stage is generally a video. And it's going to start something along the lines of, thanks for downloading our lead magnet. My system will get that out to you in 5 minutes. In the meantime, I wanted to pull together this quick video to walk you through how you can best use this. And it's allowing you to take them to that next level of depth in terms of whatever it is you're talking about, positioning your next offer. And that next offer could be a tripwire. That next offer could be a booking on the calendar. It just depends on the nature of the business. And so by spending time with you on video and allowing you to position yourself as the expert, teaching them whatever it is you're trying to teach, it allows them to go to that next level. And that could be in any business, really. It could be framing the buying decision so that they have a higher level of comfort to go to the next level. And really, that's without a specific business, that's kind of the transition plan that I go through most of the times in most businesses I work with.
As a marketer and a sales professional myself, that was poetry in motion right there. That was fantastic. I loved it. Dennis, yeah. I'd love to hear. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead. By all means.
Yeah. So, and I kind of want to take this back to, again, I think that there, it seems like Dennis and Stewart probably are more in top of funnel marketing. They're really doing a lot of content marketing, whereas our firm is really doing more of paid search, and I would say going after in market. And that's kind of, you know,
so again, you're saying your bottom.
Bottom of the funnel, yes. Bottom. So, I mean, if we're dealing with a software company for B2B software product, the last thing we're thinking about approaching them with, if they have a blank slate, right, is any sort of content marketing approach as sort of the first thing to tackle. Because, and I'll give an example again, we're working with a hotel room management software, right? Extremely, extremely specific niche product. So before we would invest in any sort of content marketing, it's, where are we at with visibility and search for that specific thing, right? And we're not going to try to generate content to rank organically. We're going to pay for that, right? So going after a highly modified hotel room management software, right? Low volume, not going to happen very often, but it's in market. They're raising their hand and saying, hey, I want this thing, right? Who's out there that does that? And that's really where we're starting. So we're trying to, we don't really know if they're qualified financially, right? But these are people that are raising their hand and saying, I'm in market. I want this very specific niche service or product. And that's where our firm starts. And then over time, we'll try to exhaust that search intent funnel up into the point that we're generating content to try to nurture people through some sort of education to bring them back down that funnel.
Nice. Very cool. Dennis, how about yourself? When it comes to the funnel process, maybe some techniques that have worked really well for you, but I'd also like to hear more specifically how you're able to go from, I guess, a cold to a warm and a warm to a hot.
Sure. So a couple of my favorite ways to migrate somebody from having, viewing a piece of content to converting into a lead and then nurturing them to, an offline conversation. So, and this is predominantly the goal when you're talking about a B2B marketer or some sort of consultant or coach, which is a lot of what I work with and a lot of what you see on LinkedIn, is, again, using some sort of a lead magnet, like I think Stuart had talked about, some sort of a high quality lead magnet. But I think it's what's really important, use that lead magnet. And then the one of two ways that I do it is I either from that lead magnet, I offer them, I suggest either offering them some sort of a strategy call. And then that strategy call, the difference is
paid or unpaid.
Well, typically this is going to be unpaid on LinkedIn because there are a lot of, you have to have a really high lifetime value of your advertising on LinkedIn.
Sure.
And paid advertising on LinkedIn does work really well if you have the right lifetime value of a client, right? It can work really well. AJ Wilcox is a great resource for that if anybody's really looking to learn about paid advertising on LinkedIn. He's one of the masters. So anyway, point being, this is more organic. So they get the content upgrade is or whatever that lead magnet is. But then from there, I either go to a webinar and then to a strategy session offer or straight to a strategy session offer. And I'm using like a coaching as a model, but it would be an assessment or whatever, depending upon the product or service you're having. But what's important there, and this is something that, again, I'm going to refer back to my conversation with Jamie Masters on my podcast, that was really in a lot of ways even eye-opening to me because I wasn't doing it the way I should be. And I think that 9 out of 10 marketers are not doing it, is rather than just booking a strategy call for anybody and everybody that raises their hand, because we all know how time consuming those strategy calls are and how expensive that is on the back end, because time is money, is having an application process, right? That really helps to define who that person is on the way in, right? So they kind of fall into three buckets. The one bucket is perfect fit, right? We know these guys are a perfect fit. They're the right title. They have the right income level. They're in the right business. Everything looks good. And that, they're a perfect fit to your avatar. The other one is they might be a fit, right? So they fit in that second bucket. There's a chance, but a couple things are off. And then the last one is there is no fit, right? It's not a good fit. And your funnel from there is going to vary, right? Your nurturing at that point is going to vary based upon those people. The people that are a perfect fit, you're going to want to bring them right into a strategy call, right? And typically that's going to be with somebody that's going to be the person who's going to be able to offer them the most value and hopefully close that sale. The other bucket may go to someone else in your sales organization that's going to pre-qualify them that much further, right? And the last bucket may never get a call. You may at that point let them know that, you know, that they're really not a great fit, but here's a bunch of information, content, you know, here's some value add for you that would be extremely valuable to where you are right now. So I don't know if I'm explaining it properly, but not all of the leads that come into your funnel should be nurtured the same way.
Got it.
Okay. You need to differentiate between those. Right now, most people, when they do a strategy call, is there's one form and that leads to a strategy call, and they book all these strategy calls and very few of them convert. Right? Yeah. They might convert maybe 10 or 20% of them if they're lucky, right? Might be more like 5 or 10% of them. But if they took this process that Jamie outlined in the podcast and they segmented their leads on the way in with this application process, they're going to spend more time with the right leads, and thus their conversion is going to go up.
Yeah, I definitely think that most people focus on all of the leads and not just a small portion of the leads. So you're smiling again, Stuart. You got
to me, that jumps right away, right? Like, I hear this all the time, like, oh, I'm talking to a lot of people and they're not buying either because the price point's too high or some other objection. And it's really a process issue, right? You shouldn't be getting on a call with people who aren't heated up to an 8, 9, or 10 in terms of likeliness to want to do business with you, view you as a provider of choice, unless you have, you know, a ton of time you want to waste, right? But I mean, as you're moving your business to the point where you're oversubscribed, you really only want to interact with people who have been appropriately moved to that hot column and know what it is you have to offer and the value, right? If you're trying to close, you're trying to close people that are, you know, in the 3% of the market that are wanting to buy today, versus nurturing the 97% of the market who, you know, will be buyers at some point in the next 12 months.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I'll chime in there as well on that. So I feel like that all is correct in theory. I just think that in practice for small businesses, oftentimes that's not how it works out. Because if you put up gates to better qualify people, so you reduce your time on unqualified candidates, you're going to get a lower conversion rate, right? Like, you're going to be able to talk to less people, which, yeah, of course, if they're not qualified, you know, whatever. But at the end of the day, you can sell somebody a lot better on a phone call or an in-person meeting than you can through a web form or through a website. So if you're dealing with a small business, I would actually say don't put up those gates, right? Like, you have time. You do have that. You're building a business. So make it as easy as possible to just get FaceTime with that person, because at the end of the day, I mean, applications, you know, they're great, but people lie on applications as well, right? So you might actually get into a situation where you're getting not really good qualification criteria because they're just not giving you truthful data, right? No one's going to submit to you their net worth on an application form when they have no relationship with you, right? So I think it's this, if you're a big established company and you're looking to refine your sales process, everything Stuart and Dennis said is textbook. That's correct. But if you're a small business, I would challenge that and say you might not be in a situation to where lead scoring is necessarily critical, right? It's not really
survival
right now. Yeah.
Survival is way more important.
Well, exactly. Yeah. You know, and Garrett, I get your point, but I think on the same side, let's say a lot of the people that I work with are coaches, right? And so their business, this is the description of their business. They're solopreneurs that might have a couple of one or two VAs that they work with on some administrative stuff. And so their time is really pressed. Now, let's say they're not a true startup. They've got clients, right? So client work has gotten them to the point where they're so busy now, they're getting moderately busy. They're not over the top busy. But the problem is that these strategy calls don't take 10 minutes, right? Typically you say they're going to take 20 minutes and they end up taking 30 or 40 or more if the lead is qualified and starts asking a lot of questions. So the problem comes, in my experience in talking to a lot of coaches, particularly, and again, I'm not talking about necessarily every industry, right? But if you talk about coaches and consultants, what happens is they get so busy fulfilling that they don't have time to do all these strategy calls. So where it comes in, or they don't have time to do strategy calls with non-qualified leads. So I agree that data can, some people lie on the forums, they definitely will. But just what I found, particularly in that niche, the coaching consulting side, is that what it does is it allows them to still fulfill at a high level with the people, their current clients, while really investing more quality time with a little bit higher scoring lead, like you said, that it scrubbed a little bit. So again, every business is going to be a little bit different, but I guess I'm a little bit more sensitive to those smaller businesses where they're up and running, they've got a business, they're fulfilling, and now they're like, oh shit, right? I need to get on these strategy calls, but I also have all this client work to do. And so they're pulled in two directions and working on the business versus in the business, that whole strategy. So I just think that this has worked pretty well for them from the perspective of really just investing their time more wisely until they have a little bit more of a team. Now, when they got a salesperson, now they've hired their first salesperson or two, and that person's got a free calendar, talk to anybody you can, right? Talk to whoever you can. Anybody that'll raise their hand can fog a mirror, talk to them until you get busy enough where you can't do that.
Stuart, do you want to close out this question?
No, I don't disagree with what Garrett said. I think there's, without having a specific business that we're looking at and understanding the constraints of the business owner we're talking about, it's all theoretical. And so, it's not I don't disagree with it. I think what he's saying makes sense. I think if you're at the point where you're managing the three systems, being, attracting, so lead generation, and you're managing sales and you're managing delivery, where you're that solopreneur or small business scaling up and you're trying to attract in your ideal client, you want to have some quality in terms of the people you're getting on the phone. And what that means is they should understand what it is your business is designed to do for their particular avatar. They should understand that you're not the cheapest option in the world. So like if your budget is $20, I don't want to talk to you, right? But it doesn't need to be like pre-sold in terms of like they're coming in and they've given you all of the information. I just think there's a happy medium there that video could really get them to a point where they're an 8-9 in terms of likeliness to want to do business with you. And that just makes it an easier sales call. Again, with the understanding that, some of Garrett's clients, they're doing B2B and they're larger organizations, they have trained professionals on the sales calls. That is very different than somebody slugging it out, trying to change hats every 10 minutes. And, not everybody has the gift of gab and is going to get on the phone and be able to close people through a sales process. Mm-hmm. So really what I'm trying to give my clients is, rather than it being a douchey sales call, it's a fit, no fit call. They've already understand the value proposition you represent, the amount of money they're going to need to invest in order to get to the outcome they want. Now let's have a conversation about your business. Is it a fit versus no fit? So again, all that to summarize, I'm not saying I disagree with what he's saying. It just comes down to who the entrepreneur is that you're working with.
Yeah, absolutely. And
one more thing, just let me add, because this is something that Garrett said and I thought was really interesting and I just wanted to add to it. He was talking about, they work closer to the bottom of the funnel, right? They've got more intent-based marketing they're focused on. And then, a lot of times those people will engage with that paid ad or with that content or whatever it is. And then they won't close, they won't buy, they won't engage. The thing that with all of the leads, I think one of the things that people are also missing, and this is kind of a strategy that I've used really, really well, and I think is overlooked, is we know that the majority of the people, whether they get on a strategy call or whether they don't get on a strategy call, whether they're qualified or not qualified, whoever they are, if they become a lead, say they've opted into something, a huge majority of them are not going to close. At least they're not going to close now. And so the thing that I've done from a nurturing perspective after that is I try to list out at least five major pain points, right? Five major pain points. And then what I'll do is I'll do a campaign around each one of those pain points over the next 30 to 60 days. And what I found is that by having those pain points, by continuing to rub a little bit of salt in the wound in and around those pain points, and then doing a really soft offer, right? A soft offer to try to help with either an additional way that they can raise their hand, whether that be another webinar, whether that be another content upgrade of some sort where they can raise their hand, or offering them something where we can do a, you know, some sort of start getting into a dialogue. What I found is that a lot of those people that would normally fall out of your funnel and you'd never hear from again and would stop opening your emails will re-engage. And I think a lot of that goes around a heavy focus on those pain points and creating. And I like the whole idea that Stuart had is of using video content. I think video engages the best. I think they're more likely to listen or watch a 3 or 4 or 5 minute video than they are to read a 15 or 200, 2000 word, you know, blog post. At least I am.
Garrett, do you want to, your name was said during the conversation, so I feel like it's only fair to for you to close this one out, my friend.
Yeah. Like Stuart said, I think this depends a lot on really the business case and what their resources are, who you're dealing with. I think video content, I agree, it's really valuable. I think one of the issues here, if there's a lot of solopreneurs listening to this, right, there's a balance of they have to be good at generating content to make content work, right? They have to be good at a webinar, they have to be good on video, they have to be good at this kind of stuff. Which when we're dealing with a small business, if we are dealing with a small business, that's why we are even pushed more towards paid search and paid activities, because there's less selling them. It's more selling the value proposition, right? So if they are not, you know, if they don't want to invest in copywriting or video or things like that, well, you know, that's very valuable content. But if you just, if you don't show well, or you don't want to invest that to have somebody else do it for you, paid search and advertising online is kind of the way around that. So I think it's just setting an expectation of content marketing works and video works, but they have to be able to do it well to a professional degree, right? To get the most out of it. Whereas paid advertising isn't rocket science, right? Anybody can run an ad that says, you know, premier managed IT services in Philadelphia, and you're basically on the same playing field automatically as everyone else. Then it comes down to your landing page.
That's a really, really good point. I love that. I want to be, we could probably talk about this for another like 24 hours until the sun comes up in the morning. But I want to be respectful as I possibly can be to each and every one of you. So we'll just end it here. The conversation, this conversation is just the beginning. I'm sure we'll continue this conversation maybe at a later date, and definitely through email between each of you. I'd like to give the next 30 seconds to each of you to just explain a little bit more about where people can find you, how they can learn more about your business, sign up for your services if need be, and the whole gamut. So Garrett, if you could just start us off, just tell us a little bit more about where people can find you.
Yeah, so you can find us on our website, 215marketing.com. So again, we're a lifecycle marketing company, primarily in B2B. So if you have a sales team, national, international, we play very nice with them, and we can offer services around sales enablement, CRM, websites, advertising, email marketing.
Very cool. Dennis, how about yourself? Where can people find you?
Yeah, so I talked a lot today about generating inbound leads with LinkedIn. And hey, thank you very much, and to my colleagues and, you know, everybody who's on here for tolerating my LinkedIn babble. But ultimately, I have a guide that I put together that I think would be very helpful. It's a 22-page guide. It's called The Ultimate Guide to Generating Inbound Leads with LinkedIn. You can go to askdennisbrown.com/guide. It's free. That goes through my entire process. Remember, I told you I became the crash test dummy over the last couple of years on generating inbound leads. And that's all of my findings, my entire system. You guys can have it for free.
Very cool. And all the links, for, as a reminder, will be on the website and in the post, so people can click where they so choose. Stuart, close us out, my friend. Where can people find you?
I'm available on Facebook, so you can search me out, Stuart Trier. Marketing Cheat Guides is the name of my company. Really, I focus on working with entrepreneurs that want to scale. My background has been in that area. First business, 0 to 8 million in 3 years. Second business, 0 to 28 clinics, sold it to a public company, and really joined that public company, took it to 100 million and sold it to McKesson, which is a Fortune 15 company. I like scale. I like to describe myself as somebody who's strategically lazy. So if you want to get somewhere quickly, easily, with the least amount of effort in the quickest amount of time, it's kind of my unique ability, and I'd love to engage with you. So search me out online.
Very cool. Strategically lazy. I dig that. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us today. I just want to be able to say again, thank you to each and every one of you for taking the time to share your stories. This webinar was brought to you by Penji today. And if you do have any type of need of on-demand graphic design needs, just head over to penji.co. For those of you that are still watching and listening, go out there and execute your vision. Everybody have a great rest of your day.